Welcome back to Word on the Hills with me, Felicity Sidnall-Reed, my co-host, Gwyn Sheltimer, and our guest this week, Jonathan Bennett, novelist, poet, and short story writer. Your latest novel, Jonathan, The Colonial Hotel, began as a series of poems. So why did you decide to change your writing into a novel?
Oh, that's a sad story, Felicity. And I can't believe you're going to make me tell it. So I began The Colonial Hotel as what I had hoped to be a novel in verse. And I finished. It was a couple of years of work, and I had felt I was done, and I gave the manuscript to two poets that I very much admire, Adam Saul and Gord Johnson, and neither of them knew that the other was also reading the manuscript at the time. And independently, they both came back and gave me the exact same feedback, which was, you know, this is the most unusual outline for a novel I've ever read. So I kind of had to lick my wounds and realize that the story was ultimately more important than you know, me trying to, you know, box it into a series of poems, and the form that just wasn't working. So I had to go back to sort of, you know, write from scratch and really flesh it out, and it became something else entirely. That said, there are still some echoes of the original poem in the book itself. So, you know, I'm pleased that it kept its lyrical feel at least.
Yes, I can see. And so really that had a big effect on the narrative, did it, and the development of the story?
Yeah, it really did. I mean, you know, there's a lesson there for emerging writers out there, which is, you know, while it's possible to write an outline of a novel in verse, it's a completely unnecessary extra step.
Yes, I can imagine. Okay, so the characters in The Colonial Hotel are named for ones in Greek poetry and myth, the chief ones being Paris, Helen, and Oenone. Your version of their story, set in an unnamed country in the present day, differs quite widely from the legends about them. Could you tell us briefly about Oenone, as her story is not very well remembered these days?
Sure, yeah. Oenone was really Paris's first wife, and she was a nymph in the original myth. And my take on the story and my recasting of it, obviously, is outrageously different than the original. I wrote against type, and I did a number of things to kind of mess with the original structure. There are some folks that find that difficult, that I've you know, strayed too far, as it were, from the original. But, you know, let's keep in mind that these myths, as we know them, were handed down orally for thousands of years before they were ever written down. And, you know, we actually don't really have a sense of what any of the original might actually have even been. I think that a character as archetypally interesting as Helen, for example, has been rewritten down through the ages because the idea of this, you know, sort of immortally beautiful woman is difficult to shake. And so both male and female writers have taken a swing at recasting her and the idea of her for many years. So the book actually began really with her. I realized I was writing this character that I'd named Helen, and it wasn't just a Helen, it was the Helen. And after a time, I realized that the male character that was kind of getting involved with her, you know, really ought to be Paris. And so Oenone came last, really. As I sort of formed a love triangle, I went back to the original myth and sort of, you know, dug into Ovid and a few others that have sort of explored this, the Tennyson poem, of course. And so I think she sort of came last, but she came fully formed. She was, you know, a matriarch in this village, in this unnamed third world sort of country. And she was a very, very powerful voice and came to me really quite well formed. So it was in some ways quite challenging to write, but in other ways, because of how strong and clear her voice was, it really just came.
Well, that's very interesting. I found her a sort of almost a representation of the strength of the land and the country
at the
end. Is that something like you had in mind?
Yeah, no, it really is. I mean, obviously, I wanted a character that had a lot of dignity and a lot of strength. She's a a leader of her community and a matriarch and really the carrier of stories, and that really does come from the land itself, from her culture. And admittedly, this is if we were in a university course here, we would be calling The Colonial Hotel not just a post-colonial novel, but it's metafictional. And that's to say it's worried about its own structure and its own storytelling.
Yeah.
And so, without kind of getting all nerdy here, she's really a character that I had to write very carefully. I didn't want to appropriate anybody's voice, of course. And so in many ways, she's an amalgamation of many different things. There's no particular country that this is set in, and the reason for that, it wasn't my intention to go and take a country story from them. It was really a way to be able to write about all stories and all countries that have been through civil war and strife, and a way to kind of write what was at the core of the book for me, which was to write an incarceration narrative. And that's really what Paris's story in this book is.
Mm. Well, it's a very powerful story of the bloody struggle to attain peace in a post-colonial society. And it certainly calls for more than one reading. There's so much tucked into it. I was sorry that I didn't get to spend more time rereading it. But I love the way the characters talk of tiny events. For example, Helen's telephone conversation with the director of her NGO, about which she writes, "We talked only briefly, her responses and questions colliding into my own words, echoing back at me in a frustrating delay that allowed no conversational rhythm to develop," reflecting, I think, Helen's dislocation. And also I found Paris's imprisonment, the way you told that, it was very illuminating. It leads to his enlightenment and ultimate redemption as he recognizes the power of memory and imagination in building a relationship with the daughter he's never known. Please tell us a little more about the present-day story in The Colonial Hotel and introduce us to your reading from it.
Sure. So the story itself is set in, as sort of we were talking about, an unnamed developing nation that's on the brink of civil war. Paris is a physician working for a medical NGO, and Helen is a nurse working for the same organization. They religiously affiliated. Helen is a very religious person. Paris is not. He meets her and falls madly in love with her and is convinced to become physician on the front lines of disaster zones and areas of famine and camps and that sort of thing. So as their relationship develops, they move around a lot, and this country that they're in has a coup d'etat, and Helen manages through a number of careful moves to escape, but Paris unfortunately gets caught behind. Helen is pregnant, and Paris spends almost 10 years isolated in a series of jail cells that switch hands depending on which side of the civil war is kind of has custody of the jail that he's in. They're three interwoven stories, and they each are a kind of conversation to an unknown child. In Helen's case, it's a pregnancy journal. In Paris's case, it's a madly written letter, essentially, to his unknown child. And in Anini's sort of story is a direct address, an oral story to the child. And I think it's that I'd like to read from, just a couple pages of Anini's story and her speaking directly to her child. This is about two-thirds of the way through the book, but I think you'll get a sense of her voice and the kind of leader and her culture.
Great.
My child, when I first looked upon this blind man, I was not sure he lived. But then, a slight shiver, a shallow breath, a muscle twitch that occurred from some animal spirit of life, let me believe that he could be saved. Each rib pressed against the skin like a fallen animal on the plains, and his eyes stared into his own vast night. I took his body and held it against my own. This is the first way, the beginning of how to return a person. As a mother holds a baby against her skin, I held this blind man and let him draw life back into his body from my own. Then I began to give him songs. They were the ancient ones, telling of how the land was made, how the great serpent comes out of the sky and carves riverbeds and mountains with his body until it rains and rains, and he leaves because he becomes so wet he cannot warm himself. The rainwater fills the rivers, and the many plants grow. Then fish and birds arrive, so happy to have found this beautiful place. But soon they fight over the best plants to eat, and one of the birds eats one of the fish, and they never trust one another again. Every time the rain stops, the sun celebrates with a round circle of colors in the sky. Every color has a place in the circle. The wild cats come down from the mountains and sing lovely songs in celebration of the circles of colors. A pack of wild dogs from another place are drawn to this singing. They come upon the cats and are so overwhelmed from the love they feel, they try to capture the singing in their own mouth, but in doing so, they bite the cat's throat. The cats refuse to ever sing again so as not to make the dogs act in this way, and now they only purr and meow in ugly ways. The dogs have forevermore hated the cats for withholding their songs, and so they hunt them, believing they can make them sing. Having begun all this, the sun no longer tempts the cat and only celebrates the end of the rain with half a circle of colors. My child, these are the same ancient songs I've passed on to you. They are a part of this story. They are your story. They are a part of everyone's story who is from this country, whether from the south or the north.
Thank you, Jonathan. That is beautiful and poetic. Many thanks for talking to us. I wish we had much longer to discuss your work. We'll have to have you back again sometime.
I'd be happy to do so. Thanks, Felicity, and thank you to Gwen as well.
Where can listeners buy your books?
I'm going to put a plug in for the brand new bookstore in Peterborough, Ontario, called Hunter Street Books.
Mm-hmm.
And as well, of course, you can purchase them online at your favorite retailer or at Chapters or any of the other stores.
Thank you. And listeners, to connect with us, please send comments, queries, or suggestions for whom we might interview in future programs to our website, www.wordonthehills.com, where all our broadcasts are archived. We love to hear from you and welcome your comments on our programs. Thanks for tuning into the show. We hope you'll join us for another program next week, right here on Northumberland 89.7, Truly Local Radio.